You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Steve, if you read this, it means I didn't make it back. It also means you've broken a filament controlling the 13-second delay trigger. End of game. Bang, you're dead.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got bars!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 125 for the 26th of March, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I'm joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fine.
I'm good. We had our warm-up, which is the Geek Actually show.
I managed to get a drink, which is probably lying to me, but it tells me that it's going to revive me, which is great, because I need a bit of reviving.
Revival is good.
Yes, so it seems to be doing a reasonable job right now, and I feel a hell of a lot better than I did on the Geek show.
There you go. All right, well, let's see if we can get this show underway. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of the Geek Actually Network. This is where we like to review a feature film. We cover a little bit of entertainment news, which is this week trailer heavy, but that's okay because this is a big week for trailers. And we have a brand new list of five, which is five movie assassins. Not movie assassins.
Yes.
All right, so we must clarify that, but we'll come back to that a little bit later in the show. We also have a slight structural change for this week. Now, we're still taking requests. We haven't had anybody write this week, but about whether or not we should do this on a permanent basis. But for this week, in particular, we are moving the feature film review to the end of the show. The reason is because we're actually doing two films simultaneously. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to review The Mechanic, the 2011 remake, starring Jason Statham, but we're also going to review the original Mechanic, the 1972 Charles Bronson film, and we're going to do comparisons, and inevitably there will be spoilers. So we thought if we move it to the end of the show, at least we can kind of contain the spoiler zone down to a reasonable place. Now, but before we do that, we have some feedback. So let's do a little bit of feedback here. Now, for those who don't listen to the Geek Action Show, things are a little bit off-kilter here slightly because we've rewired the whole studio. And so if things kind of go crazy on us, just bear with us. But we have a lot of feedback, actually, for Film Actually this week. We do have the competition details, the giveaway, and we do have one entry. Unfortunately, it's a disqualified entry because it is our friend Mike from Canada. And as we said, it is only open to the Australians to win. But we love the honorary mentions anyway.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
And he says his favorite monster movie, his answer is, "I curse you with my name, you shall be Blackula."
I own that film.
It's fantastic.
He says, No, it's really not.
It is fantastic. It's so funky jive, man.
Oh, dude, it's bad in every kind of wrong way.
He says, "I'm not a fan of horror or monster movies, but I like this one. I also like Monster Squad, but you said monster movie, not monsters movie. I would have accepted Monster Squad as well, though, because that's a great fun film. I love it. Loved hearing my email on the show, but I sounded like a tool." No, you didn't. Maybe this one will make up for the last one. "Make mine a Bloody Mary," he says. Mike from Canada. All right, so thank you, Mike, but unfortunately we don't send the discs to Canada. We didn't actually have a winner for the competition because nobody else wrote in. So
guess what, guys?
So I've passed it on to Josh. Josh has won the disc.
Yeah.
It's very easy to win these discs. You just got to get in.
Seriously, and if you don't, my collection just keeps getting bigger.
Right.
So I'm happy.
We still actually have that Serenity. We'll probably be doing that soon. And we will be doing a Ghostbusters giveaway soon.
Yeah.
But not this week. We're not going to do a giveaway this week because it's been chaos with trying to get everything else organized. All right. So we also have one from our wonderful, wonderful friend, Geek Betty, who hasn't written to us in ages.
Huh.
In fact, Geek Betty actually sent me a whole bunch of links as well, which I'm not going to read out on the show, but I want to do a little bit of research, and we might do it as a feature, all about title designs. Motion picture title. There's been a whole bunch of stuff about this recently. I did read all those emails, Geek Betty, and they're fantastic, and we'll come back to that on a later show. She says, hey, Geek Actually guys, this might be a good topic for the list of fives. Five post-credit scenes. Which I thought was a very interesting idea. You might see if you... you might see if you could get the Run P guy on as a guest. If I don't know if you guys remember Run P. This is a website that was set up which tells you the best points in a movie where you can run out and pee. And you won't miss anything.
Yeah.
He says, I've followed him since his first mention on Net at Night, and he's really good sort with what is now a reasonable U.S. profile. And yes, I would love to get him on the site. I've actually heard him on some of Leo Laporte shows. He's quite funny. And I think we have a good chance of getting him on the show. Anyway, but... this actually came about because of Run P. He responded to her about post-credit sequences, and his answer on Twitter was, it's surprising how few films have had good post-credit scenes. Zombieland was one of the last good ones that he can remember.
Dude, that was amazing.
It was. And there are a lot of films that have those little post-credit scenes, so we might actually look into that. That's a hard one to do, actually.
Yeah.
But we'll look at that. Now, we've been yelled at by Jay. Now, Jay sent us an email, says, hey, guys, love the show. Now, I've actually written back to him, so he's had my personal response. But he says, hey, guys, love the show. Not that I've seen it for 20 years, but surprised that E.T. didn't rate a mention on our list last week.
For?
Aliens Are Here movies.
Oh, yeah.
Aliens were here. And I wrote to him and
said... I'm too dark to put something like that on my list. We all know that.
I actually did write to him and say that it actually was almost on my list. I had debated it, but then I thought that the title of the show was actually The Aliens Are Here, and he is a solitary alien. But then my lovely wife, Katie, pointed out that his friends are at the beginning and pick him up at the end. So aliens are, in fact, there. And all I can say is, my bad, and I actually do love E.T., and yes, it probably should have rated a mention somewhere. But yeah, you're right. You're too dark for
it. It just wasn't going to happen. We all knew that.
Excuse my coughing. I'm still sick from last week, if you remember. And we also had this one that says... he goes on, talks about Box Office Mojo doing an article about sequels and said that maybe we should do discussion about sequels. This is from Mike from Canada again. Skip all that part. The part that was actually really interesting for me was, he says, Josh asked for the reason about Aronofsky quitting Wolverine. And he says, I read this press release and he said he didn't want to be away from his family for a year. Because remember, it was going to be shot in Japan. And then he goes on to say, I believe Matthew Vaughn said the same thing about X-Men Last Stand, because if you remember, he was going to direct X-Men Last Stand, would have required him to come to America for a year, and he would also didn't want to be away from his family, which is one of the reasons he backed out. But now he's doing the new X-Men film, so obviously circumstances have changed. But yes, I've read that article as well. Yeah, apparently he pulled out because he didn't want to go away for a year and do this Wolverine movie, which is a shame because I think it would have been an awesome Wolverine movie. He also says some unrelated news. He says that if you are in Canada or North America, I've looked it up, it's not available in Australia. Okay. But he says he found the 1994, and I think he means 1990 because it came out in 1990. He says the 1994 Captain America movie on iTunes. And thought if the two of you haven't seen it, you might want to check it out and share this information with your fans. Mike from Canada. Now, Mike, I got to tell you, 1990 Captain America is special in many ways, and I actually already own it. And we have another story about that coming up. So stay tuned, because we have a story in about 5 minutes all about that Captain America, because there is actually other news available about that. We also do in this first section of the show what we've been watching this week. And as usual, we just keep plowing through movies. But you just told me you watched one.
Oh, I watched a very special film. I sat down and watched Flesh Eaters, which is Zombie 2, I believe, if you look at its other credit, involving one of the most bizarre scenes I have ever seen, involving a half-naked scuba diving girl. That's right, she has no top on for no practical reason, almost being bitten by a zombie that for no apparent reason is underwater. And then when you thought it was over, it then wrestles and eats a shark. which is awesome.
I'm just getting a quick thing in the chat room here. By the way, we have a live chat room that people can always come and join us on our live show. James from Melbourne says that, what about his email? We're not reading it. I don't have an email from James from Melbourne. So, James, you might want to send that through again because I don't actually recall seeing one from you.
I did want to share a gem that I found over the week that I think anyone who is a horror fan should sit down and watch. I got recommended this ages ago by a friend of mine, Makissa, and he said it in that way that as film fans, when a film fan passes these particular kinds of movies on and goes, you've really got to check this one out, you know that they thought it was special. And I was waiting until I had a moment of time where it was actually something I wanted to sit down and watch. It's called The Collector, and it's actually a horror movie. It's quite recent.
Recent. No, there's a film from the 60s called The Collector which is also very good.
No, this film involves... It's probably one of the most unique horrors I've seen.
I've seen it on the shelves, yes.
Yeah, it's one of the most unique horrors I've seen in quite a while, because when I was watching it, it's done so interestingly because your main character is a thief that breaks into a house to steal something, then finds out that there is someone in the house. And at this stage, I had no idea. I hadn't read the back cover. I had no practical knowledge of what this film was going to be. But as it unravels around you, you found that he's locked up and tied up the family. Then you find out everything in the house is booby-trapped.
Oh, really?
And he's gone around meticulously setting up that you can't get out through the windows because they're booby-trapped. You can't get out through the doors because it's like 6-bolt locks. And you find out that they're locked in this house, but it's an interesting experience to be experiencing this through the eyes of someone who is avoiding the horror for the first half of the film. So you watch things happen, but he's never directly involved and the killer doesn't know that he's there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's really creepy because all these things start happening, and it's not until sort of the last quarter of the film that he actually gets involved with what's going on. The rest of the time, he's just trying to avoid being seen by this guy.
Intriguing.
Oh, it was a fantastic movie, and it ends really well. Look, I mean, it ends standardly like you would expect a horror to end, but I have to say that without any precedence, this film is one of the cult films of our generation, and they are doing a second one. And I can't wait.
All right, I got to have a look at this film.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's totally worth it. I will be buying it on Blu-ray next week.
Very cool. All right. I actually saw the cover and I thought that looks intriguing.
Yeah.
But I hadn't actually seen it yet. So I'm just going over my list. Oh, I rewatched Beetlejuice this week.
Oh, nice.
Nikki finished watching one of the Batman films and said, what else has Michael Keaton been in? I said, funny you should say. Funny you should ask that. And immediately watched Beetlejuice. And his reaction to it at the end was, that was weird. I think Beetlejuice is a fun film. I really enjoyed it. And the other film I watched this week, which I avoided until now, but Katie and I sat down to watch it, was The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Oh, yeah?
I loved it. Everybody talked about what a crappy film this was, and they all hated it. I thought it was such a funny film. Mm. It's just out of its tree. It is bizarre. It is one of those weird little films where you sit there and go, if the Coens had made this film, you would have accepted it completely. You would have said, it's a Coen Brothers film. I love the fact that it's kind of based on true story, but you don't know where the truth begins and the truth ends and where these whack jobs really take over. Mm. But I actually really enjoyed it. And I think if you just take it for what it is, it's this very offbeat, strange little comedy about the army trying to literally train up Jedi Knights. It is the weirdest thing you'll ever. The opening scene with Stephen Lang trying to run through a wall and bouncing off the wall is one of the funniest things I've seen in ages. Mm. So, well worth having a look at. I also rewatched From Paris with Love, which you had watched last week, which I enjoyed thoroughly again. Just Charlie, just wax, man.
Yeah.
Wax on, wax off. Let's just say that's all you need to know. It is John Travolta in fine form, but watching it again, I saw it at the cinema, but watching it again, I can never remember his
Jonathan
name.
Jonathan Rhys Meyers.
Myers, that's the one. He's awful.
He's fucking terrible.
He's awful, man. He's just awful.
I have comparisons for him later on in the show, but we'll talk about that later. The other thing I wanted to mention is I have started watching and have finished the first episode of Jan Kill,
Oh, okay, yes, I want to see that. Yeah, I've got it. Yeah,
and I've got to say, I understand what the hype is about now. Like, you watch the episode, and it's a really...
Now, that's made by the same people who made The Messenger, is that right?
The Wire.
The Wire, The Wire.
Yeah, yeah. And it's fantastic, and I love the way it's told, and I love the characters, and also the way the characters relate to each other, I think is fantastic. I also love that there's always this constant kind of... expectations which they play off for the character who is the reporter. So basically they'll constantly do things like pretend that they're all hex psychos and like they'll all pretend to be incredibly racist towards each other and stuff like this, and it's all a fucking gag, but it's just, you know, they're just playing up on what the American stereotypes of what it is. And it's amazing because they're all really smart characters, and yet they're all very aware of why they're there and what they're doing, and sort of also the pointlessness of what them being there, and yet they all do their jobs really well. It's a really interesting experience.
I've got to watch it. You know, I've actually had it down in my collection for ages and just haven't got to it. It's one of those situations where you go, it's time to invest time in it, and I just haven't had the time to invest in it. In our chat room, by the way, Callison said, "The Men Who Stare at Goats is awesome, and you have to read the book." I would like to read the book, actually. The book looks good. And I like James from Melbourne's answer. He says, "Book. Is that a new app?" and James from Melbourne also says, "New TV show Endgame is looking good so far." I'll have to look into that. I haven't seen anything. The other thing I watched, I actually watched it last week, but I forgot to mention it, and I should mention it here, is I watched the pilot episode to the new cable show Camelot, which is a gritty, realistic cable show style, you know, what they're doing with all these sort of things, version of the King Arthur legend. And it was actually kind of interesting, and I'm curious to watch more. So I'd like to know when the rest of the series is coming, but I actually quite liked that pilot episode. So yeah. I am a big TV watcher, and I watch a lot of new TV shows, and that looks like it could be a good one. So okay, let's move into some news. Got any more movies?
No.
Okay, let's move into some news. And guys, I got to pre-warn you in advance. We are trailer heavy. But first thing we're going to say in our news is that the new trailer. I mean, this was the one I was trying to remember. Remember when I was talking about the show and I said, there's another trailer. Pirates of the Caribbean got a second trailer.
Yeah.
And I think Josh and I are both in agreement where we looked at it and went, this looks pretty hot. I'm looking forward to this. All right, so
stupid but fun,
and hopefully they've got the right chemistry together this time, rather than the last Pirates film. And here's the trailer. Have a look at it, and then we'll have a talk about it.
Jack, have you ever seen with your own eyes Fountain of Youth?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, please?
We know you're in possession of a map.
You could guide an expedition.
I could use a ship.
What has become of my beloved Pearl?
Taken. Blackbeard.
Would the Riggan have come to life? Our own ship turned against us.
Captain, I wish to report a mutiny. I can name fingers and point names.
Perfect.
The fountain. Is that where Jack beheaded?
It is not the destination so much as the journey.
The Fountain of Youth. What does it require?
A mermaid, Jack.
We've fallen behind. We need one mermaid.
You're killing her. I'm a bad man.
Again! Fight to the bitter end!
Hardly appropriate for a first mate.
Was I the first?
It has begun!
We're part of the plan, yes?
No.
Have you been there?
Does this face look like it's been to the Fountain of Youth?
Depends on the light.
I love that last line. Does this face look like it's been to the Fountain of Youth? He goes, depends on the light. That's a great line. Oh. James from Melbourne in our chat room has basically said Penelope Cruz and I'm out. Hey, no hating, man. You know, she could be okay in this. I'm not a big Penelope Cruz fan either, but, you know, she might be good in this. Mm. Who knows? And Zed wants to know, has anyone noticed how awesome Jeffrey Rush is?
Hell fucking yes.
Yes. Jeffrey Rush is awesome in the right roles. He's been in so many bad films, that's the problem. But when he's in the right role and he suits pirates to a T.
Oh, dude. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, he is so good as Barbossa. I think this actually has the possibility of re-energizing this franchise or completely sinking it. But at the moment, it's trailering well. Both trailers have been pretty good. So here's hoping. We'll see how we go. And look, as you were pointing out while we were watching that, Keith Richards, worst actor, but awesome all the same. All right. Very sad news this week, but kind of not unexpected. Elizabeth Taylor died at 79 of heart failure. I mean, Elizabeth Taylor has been going for a while. She's been sick.
She's
for
a
years.
Battler, man.
She's been a battler, but she finally gave into heart failure this week. So a screen legend has died, which is kind of sad. I have to say, though, that I don't think she's actually done anything for quite some time. Mm. But we can always go back and look at that amazing version of Cleopatra that she did. Whether it's good or bad, it's an amazing film. You know, I mean, that's for its day, that film broke. I think it's actually listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as, at the time, I don't think it is anymore, but at the time it was listed as the biggest success in history, film-wise, and the biggest failure. Because it cost so much money to make, it couldn't make its money back.
Wow.
So it made tons of money, but couldn't make its money back. It was just an all-round disaster in so many ways, and so camp in many ways. But there's something about that film where you watch it and you just sit there, you're mesmerized by it. But all right, so let's talk about the big one, though. The big one, of course, is that we have been waiting with bated breath for the Captain America trailer. Now, we've had two trailers for Thor now. Captain America comes out July 22nd. And finally, they released a full-length trailer for this film. Now, we have talked about Captain America a lot over the last few months. And I think we were the first ones who basically said that this is probably the hardest superhero to make because he walks a very fine line to being super camp.
Yeah.
The man wears a giant American flag on his chest and, you know, he's the all-round American Boy Scout, and that's going to be a hard thing to do. And I think, and then we found out Joe Johnson was directing it, and we went after Wolfman. Oh my God, this is not the right choice. But then somebody reminded us in our chat room when we were talking about it that he also directed, you know, The Rocketeer, and he directed Jumanji. I mean, he's made some good films, and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the first one. And you sit there and go, he has made some good films.
He's also, and the thing that I was thinking of last week was the fact that he also really expertly walks that line between almost campness. Like, if you look at something like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, it could be a really dumb film.
And we know that because the sequel is handled by somebody else. Yeah. It just fell on its face, you know? So, yeah, I agree with you. And I think the one that I'm going to hold on to for hope, though, is The Rocketeer. Because I think The Rocketeer is a really good film, also set in 40s wartime. Mm. I think in the long run, he was actually the right choice.
Mm-hmm.
So now we finally see it. We saw that quick glimpse at Super Bowl, and we thought, that actually looks kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then this trailer hit this week. And I got to tell you, I've watched this trailer so many times now, I can't even count.
I think I'm up to 10.
Yeah, and I'm really, really eager for this. Much more eager than I am for Thor, in fact. So here, sit back and have a look at Captain America, the First Avenger.
Rogers, Steven.
Just give me a chance.
Sorry, son.
I'm saving your life.
General Patton has said that wars are fought with weapons, but they are won by men.
You just don't know when to give up, do you?
I could do this all day.
Our goal is to create the greatest army in history.
I should be going with you. Look, I know you don't think I can do this.
This isn't a back alley, Steve. It's war.
But every army begins with one man.
5 tries in 5 different cities.
I can offer you a chance.
He will be the first in a new breed of super soldiers.
Why me? Because the weak men lose the value of strength, lose the value of power.
That wasn't so bad.
That was penicillin.
We are going to win this war because we have the best men.
Now, Mr. Stark.
Nay, will personally escort Adolf Hitler to the gates of hell.
How shit hot does that look?
Dude, that is just a great looking trailer. And you know what? I've never been interested in Captain America, but that looks fantastic.
Absolutely.
That just looks like a fun movie.
And that line is going to become as held in our vernacular as with great power becomes great responsibility.
Yeah.
That line where he says, why me? He goes, because the weak...
weak man understands
power.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, that's just, understands strength or whatever it is. It's just a fantastic moment. And you sit there and you look at it and go, the casting is great. The look is fantastic. I really do like his costume much more now. I've really growing into that costume because it looks functional. It doesn't look like the overblown Captain America suit of the comic books. So I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait till July, quite frankly. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I also think that the digital work on making Chris Evans look
I can't wait to see that for long periods of time because I want to see how well it works.
Because that's fantastic work on the trailer.
It's noticeable. It's still
noticeable. Because we know Chris Evans, though, you know? And so we're looking at it going, God, you know?
No, now, but he also has kind of almost a slight bobblehead effect.
His
head's just a little bit too big for
his body. If you want to see that trailer in much better detail, we have it embedded at geekactually.com and we have the link to Apple. They have the high-def version. The high-def QuickTime. So you can find both of those on geekactually.com. The link will be in our show notes as well. So do have a look at those. But and what is it we say? The movie is made awesome by Tommy Lee cameo. Tommy Lee's fantastic. He's always fantastic. Tough girl who shoots the guy. She's a stereotype tough girl, but it's a comic book. Of course, it's going to have stereotypes. It's all going to have stereotypes all over the place.
No, but the point is that they need to embrace that. As long as you embrace the obvious stereotypes in movies like this, because I mean, like, that's exactly what you're getting. You're getting the best parts of what are stereotypes. That's usually what we go for in comic books. We go for the stereotypical hardship guy that then manages to save the world or whatever, and you know, that sort of thing. It's just like, this is what you're here for. You're not here for sort of realism and things
and
like that.
And I actually applaud the choice for making it the 40s Captain America. I really do. Because you know, this is no spoilers, and we haven't heard this. This is just what we know, is that at the end of this film, he will get frozen.
Yeah.
And then in the Avengers movie in 2012, they will find him and defrost him for the Avengers. That's what's going to happen. He's not going into the modern age in this movie. This is the 40s Captain America. Yep. And that is such a good choice.
Yep. Absolutely, I agree.
Because that just establishes him. And then if they do the Avengers right, you've got all of that stuff about Captain America feeling like a man out of time, which is a very big plot point in early Captain America, which was he just He's not supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. His girlfriend and his best friend are now old people, you know,
yeah.
And he's out of his depth, but he still stands for the right things, you know. Mm. And I love that somebody criticized, why has he got a gun? He's a soldier. Captain yeah. America used a gun in
I'm
the 40s.
Sorry. Yeah, no, absolutely. You
know, that was, he's a soldier. He only stopped using a gun in the modern age as a superhero. Yeah. But in fact, in the Ultimates, if you go to the Ultimates, he still carries a gun, but that's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's Captain America. Now, on the flip side of that, is that the 1990 version, which was produced by Cannon, who are the Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus, who were those amazing, amazing producers who gave us Life Force and Invaders from Mars and all those other wonderful films, produced a version of Captain America directed by Albert Pyun. Now, Albert Pyun directed a fantasy film that I quite enjoyed when I was a kid called The Sword and the Sorcerer, but he also went on to direct fantastic pieces of shit like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Cyborg.
Oh, man. Okay?
And he directed the Captain America film. Now, the Captain America film that came out in 1990, well, barely came out, but when it came out, was only like 90-something minutes long. And Albert Pyun actually said that it was shredded.
Yeah.
He said that his version was much longer than that and had a lot more character building. I still don't think it's going to be a good film.
I don't know.
But he did say that there was more substance to it. He is releasing a director's cut of his 1990
Dude,
Captain America in May, and I will be first in line.
Yep, we will be waiting at the store with no one behind us.
Damn straight. If they release it on Blu-ray, all the better. All right, so just to refresh your memory for those who haven't seen it.
Oh, no way. You got a trailer?
This is the trailer
yes.
for the 1990s Captain America. Are you ready?
You get your guinea pig.
Happens to be the best damn candidate out of 600 volunteers.
A secret experiment gave one man the strength of 100.
The rest of the world, he's just codenamed Captain America.
And the power to save millions.
The Jerry's have an experimental rocket ready to fire on a target somewhere in the United States.
Only he could defeat a superhuman madman.
They got a fella called the Red Skull heading up their outfit. All we can hope to get in there is one good man.
But saving the world left him trapped in an icy grave until fate released him to finish a battle started decades ago.
Yeah, he's still alive. We don't know where he is or who he is.
Now, an evil genius is on the verge of global domination.
Captain America, you gotta help us.
And only Captain America can stop him. Ronnie Cox, Ned Beatty, Darren McGavin, Kim Gillingham, Scott Pollan as the Red Skull, and Matt Salinger as the Marvel Comics hero, Captain America.
Awesome!
Dude, that's so funny.
Is all I can say, awesome, at this point. It is such a bad film, and all I can think is, how the hell did they talk Darren McGavin, Ned Beatty, and Ronnie Cox into doing this film?
Yeah. Come on, Ronnie Cox has done some pretty
good Well, that's
films.
True. And I guess, you know, Ned Beatty probably needed to build an extension on his house or something. But you know what? It's another case of a Cannon film that went into production and then basically said, oh, by the way, we haven't got any money. And he's got the typical latexy looking suit that was popular in the day because everybody was trying to emulate the first Batman movie, you know, and it's like, oh, no, not good.
Dude, that first time you see him with the mask on, he's got the terrible blue eyeliner underneath it. Oh, man, no.
Yes, no, it is not a good film by any means, but I will go out and buy the director's cut. I would love to see
it. I have to sit down and watch that. Again, that's fantastic.
Well, we'll just wait until May now. It's not too far away, you know? All right, so we have two more trailers. Now, I actually only had one more trailer, and then Josh threw another one into the mix. He said, have you seen this trailer? And I went, no. So I had a look at it and went, ooh. So I thought we'd do that
bizarre,
one as well.
Bizarre, and I love bizarre.
But I think we'll finish the trailer section with that one because the next one's probably going to put a really bad taste in your mouth, and then we'll wash it out with the last one. So, first of all, we have a second Red Band trailer, because we obviously didn't learn our lesson from the first Red Band trailer, and I'm probably alone on this, guys. I think I don't know how Josh actually feels about this, but
I haven't seen the second
The
one
movie
yet.
The Highness.
Your Highness.
Your Highness, sorry. Just looks, to me, awful. And I wrote as much on the post when I put this trailer up on geekactually.com. It just feels like Cheech and Chong's Corsican Brothers. It just feels silly and stupid. And it's a shame because somebody actually said to me, oh, well, you just hate Danny McBride. I said, no, I actually really like Danny McBride. And this is what I put in my post. I like Danny McBride. I thought he was awesome in Tropic Thunder. I thought he was awesome in Pineapple Express. Hmm. I don't think he can carry a film. I think he's a really good support player. And I think the problem is with his brand of humor wears thin after a while. James Franco. I love James Franco. I'd watch him do anything, but as I pointed out on the post, except host the Oscars again. But I would watch him do just about anything else. But once again, I just look at this film and go, what are you doing? Natalie Portman. I love Natalie Portman. What is she doing in this, you know? Anyway, and the director of the film, David Gordon Green, I really liked Pineapple Express. I thought Pineapple Express was an awesome film. I just don't think it works here. Anyway, so have a look at it. This is the Red Band trailer, second Red Band trailer. The one thing I will say about this second Red Band trailer is it's mercifully much shorter than the first Red Band trailer. But have a look at this and tell me what you think of this one.
May we take pause for one moment? Doesn't Courtney's new haircut make his head look like the tip of a penis?
Why would you say that?
Woo! Look at her. Filthy curves and muddy buttocks.
If I wasn't already promised, I'd dirty that water up with her.
Are you just going to sit here and ruin all of my jerkings?
My brother's bride was stolen by a devious wizard. We aim to kill the magical cocksucker.
Ow. It's my birthday today, you know.
Fuck that.
With our huge muscles, we will protect you.
Frightening.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Come back here, you.
That is, it might be a trap.
It's a trap! A booby trap!
I have seen pain in these dark ages. My only advice would be to hang in there, keep your head up, have sex as much as you can by campfire.
Don't fucking touch me.
Not even on a tender night like this. The cold air licking your tits.
Let us quit!
Your Highness.
Till we meet again.
April 8th.
I'm sorry, that didn't even raise a snicker from you.
The first one was funnier. Yeah. The first one just had some... Like it's a drug movie. Let's not try and pretend any other way. Like you said...
Okay, granted. And I love a lot of the early Cheech and Chong films. That's fine.
And in the first one... It had drug references that were funny. Like the Paul video with them all sitting around the campfire. Funny. That's not funny.
That's not funny.
Yeah, no. And that's cool. I'll be with you on that one. Now, a mutual friend of ours, Dave Kaziki, has seen the film already.
Okay.
And he said it's enjoyable, but it is incredibly flawed. And that's pretty much where I'm expecting it to hit. I'm expecting to laugh maybe 10 times.
Do you know what the film feels like? Do you know what the film feels like to me?
What?
The film feels like to me a bunch of stoners got together and went, oh, this will be fucking funny.
No, because
you know?
Like,
and that's the sort of humor that's it's like, oh, if she said fuck off right now, that'd be funny, you know? And that's what it feels like.
I don't know. I mean, like, I think there's...
I think the secret to writing a good stoner comedy is not to be stoned when you write it.
We'll see. I think Danny McBride was too involved in the project. I don't mind Danny McBride as an actor, but there fails to be a lot of Danny McBride humor in it, and I don't like his humor always seems like it needs a laugh track. You know, like
yeah,
something
that bump
needs,
bump.
To,
yeah.
needs to remind you that it's funny. And yeah, so I'm not seeing it so far.
I'm not real impressed with anything I've seen from Your Highness yet. I will go see it. You know, I will go see it.
Yep.
Because pretty much I would go see Natalie Portman read a phone book at this point. You know what
and
I mean?
She is going to be... You know,
in
naked.
Her little bathing suit. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So there's plenty for you to see.
There's plenty for me there, you know. But I mean, things like it could be a trap and then the naked girls come running out and he goes, yeah, it's a trap. It's a booby trap. It's like, this is like bad Mel Brooks comedy, you know. This is like year one all over again, you know. Anyway, Calicent, you should be slapped for that joke. Yeah. He says he was hoping that Your Highness was going to be a Michael Jordan biopic.
That's not that. That's awesome. If that was the case,
it'd be great. But we know it's not, and you know.
Moving right along.
Delta Knight says, "Bring back Mel Brooks." Mel Brooks' '70s was freaking funny. Mel Brooks' later years, didn't work so well. we bring up Life Stinks, Spaceballs. Spaceballs had some funny stuff in it, but overall,
Spaceballs
flawed.
Is fantastic. You know, what's wrong with you?
Spaceballs was one of those films where I sat there at the cinema and I didn't laugh at all for like the first 35 minutes. I'm sitting there going, oh, this is really painful. This is really stupid. And there's that scene, sorry, spoilers for Spaceballs, where the cast of Alien are in the diner and he goes through and the thing bursts out and then puts on the little top hat and sings and dance out of there. I laughed so hard that was worth the price of admission just for the little singing and dancing alien.
I love that film. I don't have a problem with that film.
All right, let's wash
thank you, James.
Let's wash that bad taste out of our mouth with this very odd looking little film that Josh has found. And Josh said, have you seen this? I said, no. I looked at it and I went, wow, that's awesome. And you compared it perfectly to the American title is called The Lucky Number 11 and the Australian title is The Wrong Man.
Yep.
And absolutely, it's got that exact feel to it. And all I can say is Sam Elliott rocks. Yep. You know? So here's the trailer for a new film coming out. It's getting limited release. I don't think it's a big release, and who knows when we'll ever get it here. But it's a film called The Big Bang.
It'll probably have a new title as well.
Yeah, it'll probably it'll be like The Lucky Number 11. Yeah, it'll probably... They'll say, oh, Big Bang's too close to The Big Bang Theory. We got to change the name. Anyway...
I actually thought that's what it was. I thought it was a movie-length version of The Big Bang.
And funny you say that. When I actually went to YouTube to find the trailer, there are actually fan-made, and some of them are actually quite funny. There's fan-made Big Bang the movie trailers where they've taken like mashups from the series and turned it into like a movie trailer. It's actually very clever. Anyway, so here's The Big Bang, and then we'll get on to our feature review.
I'm a human lie detector. If you don't tell me the truth, I'll beat it out of you.
Meet Ned Cruz, a real-life private eye. Her name is Lexi.
This is your girlfriend?
Duh.
What's the punchline?
What is meaning of punchline? Got to find her. She has diamonds.
What diamonds? $30 million worth.
Where?
Where?
You really don't know?
And cut. Reset. Who's next?
Do you know this woman?
I ain't never seen this stripper.
You're making a cameo?
Hitchcock did. Where can I find her?
Wow, you totally don't belong here. There's these tunnels where there's supposed to be this secret underground military base. Then Simon, gazillionaire, visionary Kestrel, bought it.
I'm Simon Kestrel. 27 hours, I'm gonna find something that theoretically should exist, but no one has ever seen.
Funny, that is exactly what I am looking for.
What do the flashbulb boys have on me this time?
We've all got kinks.
Dr. Niels Geck.
You cannot predict with any certainty what will happen next.
Where is she?
Lexi!
I did not mean to kill him. Sometimes, I don't know. I just...
react. I'm looking for a woman.
You have arrived here at the penultimate moment. Where are the diamonds now?
He doesn't know where the diamonds are.
To dead end?
These are the spiral trails left by subatomic particles. It's real life magic.
God is the Wizard of Oz. He's the man behind the curtain. And I'm yanking back that curtain.
Lights. Camera. Action.
It's like the Coens on crack.
Dude, it's fantastic. It looks like a perfect blend between the two. It looks like everything that was the craziness in Big Lebowski mixed with Lucky Number 11 and Antonio Banderas.
Wrapped up in this strange pseudo-noir rapper.
It looks so bizarre, and I love a good bizarre film, and that looks fantastic.
So I'm looking forward to that, I don't know when it's ever going to come out here.
Thank you, Kellison. He's like, okay, I want to see this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no.
It's very rare when you see a trailer. It's like when we saw the trailer for Electrolux, and we just went, that's just odd.
Mm.
You know, I just want to see that because it's odd, you know? Something different. It's one of the things that Hollywood really lacks at the moment is originality. And so when something comes out, you sit there and go, yeah, that's original. That's different. That's something new. All right, let's move into, I know that was kind of trailer heavy for news, but let's move into these feature film reviews. And we're going to read two synopses back to back here, okay? Because inevitably we're going to be talking about these things kind of simultaneously. Mm. We'll kind of condense a review of The Mechanic first, then we'll throw in the original into the mix, and we'll juice it up. But first of all, let's talk about the 1972 version. Depending on where you buy it, there's two different names for this film. Its original title is The Mechanic, but it got re-released in America under a different name.
Wait. The Killer of Killers.
Killer of Killers. That's right. So when you actually see the trailer I've got, because I've actually got the trailer for it here, when you actually see the trailer, it's actually called Killer of Killers. It's directed by Michael Winner, who went on to direct the Death Wish films. It's written by Louis John Carlino, and it stars Charles Bronson, Jan Michael Vincent. Now, I was saying to Katie, it's funny, his heritage, obviously, I would assume that his name was probably originally pronounced Jan Michel, and because it's been Americanized, it's now just Jan Michael Vincent, you know? But Jan Michael Vincent, who was the, hottie of his day, can't act but looked good and everybody wanted him. So Keenan Wynn and Linda Ridgway and Jill Ireland. And Jill Ireland, of course, went on to be Charles Bronson's wife, and she died of cancer not so long ago. So the mechanic, or assassin, Arthur, is the best at his job. I said job or craft. He has made assassination an art form. He has learned to stay detached and methodical. But when he is told to kill his friend Harry, it's hard for him, but he does it anyway. Harry's son Steve wants into the business, and Arthur decides to make Steve his apprentice. The plot thickens when Arthur finds out Steve's next contract is Arthur. And he has to then... And it's actually a really interesting dynamic in the film, and the fact that for quite some time, he knows he's the target, and it's about... when so here's the trailer very quickly for the 1972 version of The Mechanic, and see what you think of this, as advertised as only the 70s could advertise.
Charles Bronson, the number one box office star in the world, in The Magnificent Seven, The Great Escape, The Dirty Dozen, The Valachi Papers, Mr. Majestic, and Death Wish. He has shown a magnetism unequaled in motion pictures. Now, Charles Bronson, Killer of Killers. One man who does what the police can't do. What the government won't do.
There are alternatives to everything.
He stops the underworld dead in its tracks. Eliminating the pushers.
And that's against the law.
Executing the murderers.
Murder is only killing without a license. And everybody kills.
Exterminating the rats who run organized crime.
Nobody lives forever.
He hunts down the men you'd like to hunt yourself.
Get away with it depends on the book of rules you have in your pocket at the time.
One of the tools of the trade, my friend.
Charles Bronson. In his biggest, most exciting movie ever. Killer of Killers.
That trailer is so misleading.
Dude,
it's unbelievable.
Ridiculous. It's
But I say to Josh during that trailer, it just, you can see exactly where the advertising for Machete came from. That total inspiration with, and he gets the bad guys.
It's like, what was it? And people you'd like to kill yourself or something? And you're just sitting there going, wow.
He does the things the cops won't do. No, he actually is the bad guy here.
Yeah, he just kills other bad guys.
It's like, you sit there and go, boy, you needed to, they were trying to capture that Death Wish market. They needed to make him look like he was the good guy. Anyway, so that's the original. That brings us to 2011. Now, the new film, now see if this synopsis sounds familiar. We'll get to the synopsis in a second, but directed by Simon West, and Simon West is a director who directs with the subtlety of a sledgehammer. His previous films were Con Air and the first Tomb Raider movie, written by Richard Wenk and, oh, surprise, Louis John Carlino. the same writer. It is based on the 1972 film of the same name. It stars Jason Statham, Ben Foster, Tony Goldwyn, Donald Sutherland, and Minnie Anden, who was a babe, mind you. She was the prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see if this sounds familiar. A mechanic, or assassin, Arthur, is best at his job or craft. He says a bullet is easy, but making it look like a hit, didn't take place is an art form. He has learned to stay detached, but when he is told to kill his friend Harry, it's hard for him, but he does it anyway. Harry's son Steve is so depressed over his father's death, he sets out to kill every carjacker he can find. Arthur decides to make Steve his apprentice, and while Steve is not as refined as Arthur, he learns fast, but the plot thickens when Steve finds out it was Arthur who killed his father.
Mm.
So we've strayed off the plot a little bit here, because if we remember in the first mechanic, he actually says, "I killed your father," at one point, and Jack McGovern goes, "Well, I didn't like him anyway." We did stray a little bit away from the initial plot by the end. But we'll come back to the differences in a minute. This is the trailer for The New Mechanic, and it's a much better trailer, guys. So here we go. Here's Mechanic.
What I do requires a certain mindset. I do assignments, designated targets. Some jobs need to look like accidents. Best jobs are the ones nobody ever knows you are there.
There's no one better than you, you know. You're a damn machine. You need someone to watch your back.
This wouldn't be about Steven, would it? He's your son.
Damn disappointment. Always has been, always will be.
Harry McKenna sold this company out.
It must be a mistake.
You know how this company works, Mr. Bishop. He had to be removed.
Sorry about your father.
It was a loss for both of us.
I want to know what you know. Go online. It's all on the internet. But I don't want to read it. I want to do it. Follow me. You know what a mechanic is? A hitman. It's how to take your training to the next level. So what's the plan now? Time to finish the job. Pretty impressive, huh?
Those were my best teams. Guess I'll have to send more.
Save the fuel. We're coming for you.
You think you can get to me before I get to you?
I already have. Do it.
Okay, I think it's fair to start with the remake, because this is the one that people can go see right now, and basically say, Josh, what did you think of it as a film?
Just as a film?
As a film.
I thought it was terrible. I really didn't enjoy this film. Look, there are a lot of decent explosions and good gunplay, but I find that the story is just so incredibly unsatisfying the whole way through. There's always going to be references in this between the two of them, because I'm sorry, but if you're making a remake...
We've actually said many times, and we're going to get on a little bit of a rant here as well, I think, but we've said many times that a film should be able to take on its own merits and not match to the original and so forth. But it's hard sometimes, because maybe we should do this before we actually talk about this film very quickly. And we're going to come back to this point. But it's very hard when a company sets out to make a remake of a film which is a seminal classic. I mean, The Mechanic is arguably one of Bronson's best films.
Yeah.
It was incredibly successful in its day. A lot of people remember it. And you sit there and go, okay, we're going to remake that film, but we're going to stray so far away from it that it's no longer what The Mechanic was.
Yeah.
So the argument comes down to, why bother remaking the film? Why not just make a new film about assassins?
Like, you could even reference the fact that you took ideas from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no. And look, this is essentially my problem is, initially, I tried to do this movie in two separate parts, and the first part of me is going to take it as just a film, and I tried to enjoy it on that factor, and I didn't, because I just felt that, like, as an example, the Transporter stories, which I'm going to compare it to, because that's essentially what they tried to do here.
It looks like Transporter 4 in many ways.
Yeah. Had a lot more, he was a much more refined person. He was very smart, and he was also very, very good at understanding the fact that attachment meant trouble, right? And he was just good enough that he could just keep outside that world. Now, this film throws these sort of things to the wind, and it's like he takes this guy under his wing, but that's a dumb idea because he knows that this guy's going to fuck up everything he touches. He sees that in the kid. Mm. The kid is a fucking menace from day dot. It's like this guy walks into the middle of the street and goes to shoot a fucking carjacker.
Yeah.
And it's like, this isn't the kind of person a professional person would take on board. I'm sorry, it's just not that easy. And it's not the kind of game that you want that sort of person running around. Number two, they're supposed to be professionals. None of this shit is ever professional. Like, none of it ever goes down how it's supposed to, bar the first hit, which is really stupid. I'm sorry, it's just a bad hit.
Yes.
Like, it's not good.
It's badly executed as a film as well, though.
Yeah,
it's from a
and
scene.
I'm sorry, that it doesn't matter how black the bottom of your fucking pool is, someone will notice you if you are breathing on an apparatus underwater.
Well,
it's just
and one step further than that. And I'm sure they're probably trying in their minds to rationalize it, that it's from the point of view of the person looking down. But we see the shot under the water. Statham is actually holding the guy's wrists and making it look like he's still swimming.
Yeah.
We see his hands around his wrists, and his hands aren't hidden.
Yeah.
When we see the shot from above, there's no hands around his wrist.
Yeah.
You know?
And more to the point, it's just like, I'm sorry, but it's not a foolproof plan. There's all these guys around him, and it's a pool. So if something goes wrong, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You have dudes above you on balconies with guns.
Did you notice they never actually showed him get out of the pool? How did he get out of the pool? We see him doing the swimming, we see the guard looking down, and the next thing we see him burst through a room taking his wetsuit off.
Yeah.
We never actually saw him get out of the pool. How did he
I assume it's in, like, the moments between them seeing the dead body. But
Once again,
look,
we shouldn't have to assume that.
Yeah, no. And my further problem is, just as a hit, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, it's like you would not get into a position where if something went wrong, you have dudes on balconies with perfect views of you.
Hmm.
It's just, no, I'm sorry. There are hundreds of ways you could have done that better. And the original did it better, but we'll come into that later.
Yes.
Now, so all of this being said, I love Ben Foster as an actor. In this, I actually was getting kind of annoyed with him because he's just playing
He's a one-note character, and it's not a particularly appealing one-note character.
Yeah, and it's like when you see him in something like The Messenger or something like that, you really see him stretch that acting ability in that role, that jaded kind of down character, as best he can, right? I would love to see him play some other stuff, but he did that really well. Mm. In this, he just doesn't. He plays the best he can, and to be honest, he's not floundering due to an inability. He's floundering due to the fact that the source material is just shocking. It's just, it's not very well put together. The hits aren't interesting. Apart from the one hit, which is Donald Sutherland, which we've already seen that character in the original one, so that's not really a spoiler. Every other hit is just not very good. Like, it's not very well planned. At least with that, it was kind of...
It looked like it had been planned a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And
which is one of the things that actually kind of bothered me about this film was the fact that for somebody who is so meticulous, and he even says in many times in the film, and we'll come back to the original in a minute, but so many times in this film, he has said, that's not how I work. I plan it. I plan it, and I check things over, and I make sure everything is right, and blah, blah. We never actually see that in
this
film.
All improv.
No, we see him open his corkboard, start to pin photos up, and then suddenly we're in the job.
Yeah, exactly.
We never actually see the planning process.
Yeah.
So we don't know how long these things actually take, you know? Yeah. We don't know how long he actually plans for. We don't know how well thought out these things, because if they are as planned out as he says they are, he should get out of that line of work, because he makes so many mistakes.
Exactly. Well, look, I think we can safely probably move in. Like, this is all I have to say on the film. I'm sorry. I am just incredibly disappointed, and I thought it was a fucking shit film. And that's as far as my review goes.
All right, and for me, I would look at it and say, look, if this film had been called Transporter 4 and
you know, an hour longer,
a
fucking 90 minute film.
It's really short. It's like I came home and my lovely wife Katie goes, what are you doing home? It's like It's like I sat through the trailers and it was over. You know, so you know
it's
that
like bang 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 bang.
You know that trailer we just showed? The film's about 10 minutes longer than that, right? So it's a very short film, and I came back and I said, you know, had the producers decided that they wanted to make an original film about hitmen, and it was Statham and Ben Foster doing, you know, something else, and some of the scenes are kind of fun, like the one where he goes to kill the religious guy. It was kind of a fun scene. It's very Transporter-like, with going off the sides of buildings and stuff like that. That would have been fine with me. And it's like you sit there and you go, it's a mediocre action film that you go, it's okay.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's called The Mechanic, and the fact that it's produced by Chartoff and Winkler, who produced the original Mechanic, the fact that it's written by the guy who wrote the goddamn original Mechanic, and the fact that we have that original template to work from, you sit there and go, this film is crap.
Yeah.
You know? If it had been just an original piece, Statham actioner, you would have gone, it's okay. It's mediocre DVD fodder. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. DVD fodder at best.
But it's because it is what they're claiming it to be, it's not. And unfortunately, because it's not of that, it brings us to inevitable comparisons to the original film.
So let's do some comparisons. And I want to say straight off the bat, the most disappointing thing about the new
first,
film...
First, before we say anything, let's just say that from this point onwards, there may be spoilers for a film that is 40 years old and a film that we don't really recommend you go see anyway. Mm. So just be aware. We'll try not to do super spoilers, but if you've seen the original film, you
I'm
pretty
not
much
gonna
know
go, I'm not going
anyway.
To go into story spoilers, but I want to say that one of the most embarrassing comparisons between it is how incredibly good, even this far on, the original 15 minutes of the original Mechanic is.
Yeah.
It is just no talking, no dialogue, but meticulous planning. And that is what gives you the concept that Charles Bronson's character is a really meticulous, well-thought-out kind of a person.
He is a mechanic. It's all about precision. And you're right. That first, I actually timed it this time watching it because when people talk about it, it's 14 minutes, 45 seconds until the first word is uttered in the film. And the first word is hello when he answers the phone, you know? Yeah. And you sit there and for that 14 minutes, 45 seconds, for those who are going to go, boy, that would be really, it is so intriguing to watch the process of him plan this hit, his patience, and everything about his movements and what he's doing and meticulously planning this hit and watching the guy is just amazing.
Yeah,
you know?
No, absolutely. Really good scene and a really good character. And I mean, like, Charles Bronson isn't one of my favorite characters, but he just embodies the role because he's got that silent kind of guy you would see in a bar and you'd never be aware of what he did. It's just he keeps to himself, he keeps his job really well controlled, and he's just always that guy. He never gets stressed. He never gets really kind of intense. He just goes clinical nature.
It's that steely, clinical Charles Bronson. It's the role is actually perfect for him, which is, I think, why it has sat so well with fans over the years, because it suits him to a T. He just has this presence on screen that you understand why in the 70s he was a massive star. I mean, Charles Bronson was the Schwarzenegger of his day, you know? He was a massive star, and you understand watching this film why. Because even though he wasn't a very good actor, neither is Schwarzenegger, that he has a presence on screen that is undeniable, you know? It's that face.
Yep.
You know, it's that face.
That
what can I do?
What was it? Craggly face
that
he used?
That craggly face of his. It's like with the little mustache and the cold eyes. And you know, J. Michael Vincent's a terrible actor. There's no doubt about that. But he suited the role. He was kind of the hotshot pretty boy, you know?
It's very much similar to, and I was going to, I was talking about this in the trailer before. I was saying that, look, there is a real comparison to From Paris with Love for me, because it's like you've got Charles Bronson, who's basically Charlie Wax, who is just, when he's on screen, it's awesome and things are going down. And then you just have this pretty boy with no acting ability and he's just on screen to try and get the female components into the cinema. I will say, though, that I found it a really interesting scene, and it also really set up his character, even though he was really shit, in the scene where the girl goes to kill herself.
That's an intriguing scene, too, because that's like, just weird.
It's very 70s.
Yeah.
It's that very kind of like...
She wants to basically take drugs and overdose and kill herself, and Charles Bronson's on one side of the room explaining how to do it, and the times it'll take, and J. Michael Vincent's going, yeah, yeah, just do it, just do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's a bizarro, surrealistic scene.
Yeah, but the thing that I liked about it is it set up the fact, and for me, that's where the establishment of the two of them coming together is. It's like he gets it out of the way because he's a very straightforward kind of a person. He tells the kid straight out, I killed your dad, and he does. He reacts, like you said, and says, I don't really care. He wasn't a great person, which is the first connection between the two of them, because you don't just get into someone like this as good books. You don't just become their underling just because it's like, oh, I killed your dad. All right, come on, let's do this. It's like, no, a person like that with a meticulous nature does not like chaos.
No.
And the great thing about it is during that scene where the girl's going to kill herself, he notices the fact that this kid has no uncomfortable nature towards
death. No remorse either.
Exactly. And he's sitting there going, I can use you. You are what I need you to be. And it's like, that's great. And it worked really well. And it's like, as you go through the film, the connection to them joins because they both have that nature, that disconnected,
whereas in the new film, you've got the scene where they do plan. The one time you actually see them planning something is the bit with the chihuahua and the coffee shop and that hitman that they're going to take out. But they plan it all, and he says, don't try and take him on because you'll lose, right? So they're just going to poison him, and it's done, right? Yeah. And then, of course, Ben Foster decides to do it his way, gets the crap beaten out of him, and it's all very chaotic and, you know, it's all messy, right? Yeah. And all I can think is, at this point in time, if Statham's character was the Charles Bronson character, he would have put a bullet in Foster's head and basically said, you're untrainable.
Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. And, like, that's what annoys me. It's like, there is no reason for the two of them to come together.
Bless you, sir.
Thank you. There's no reason for the two of them to come together, nor does the personalities of either two connect well.
Hmm.
And I didn't buy any chemical connection between the two of them, and I didn't get the feeling that he was trying to, you know...
This is in the new version.
Yeah, in the new version.
In the old version, because I can actually see them working together, because... Yeah. They have a similar style of working together. He's a bit of a hotshot, but that's okay. It's workable, you know?
And the great thing about it is that as you go through, and even when you get to the end, and spoilers for a movie, and you can turn it off for 2 seconds because I'm going to reveal how it ends, but reality is...
Well, we actually showed the ending of the original mechanic in our opening clip.
Exactly. And the thing about it is that all it was business from both sides.
Mm.
It's just he took a shot and tried to kill his mentor and move on and become, you know, sort of a hitman from then on. And Charles Bronson's just better.
Yeah.
And that was how it ended.
And Bronson knew the inevitable and planned for it, you know?
Exactly.
And I love that.
And
about
that's the great thing, because it comes back to their calculating nature. And that's what makes it a good film, is the fact that everybody is planning at all times, and it just comes down to a sort of almost a cat and mouse thing between the two of them, where it's like they're aware that this is going to happen, and you're just like, who won at the end of this?
Well, and once again, spoiler, we're in a spoiler zone, but I will just say spoilers for a 40-year-old movie. There's that wonderful look on Bronson's face where he's given the glass of wine at the end, and he takes that first drink, and you know as soon as he's taken that first drink, he knows something's up.
Yeah.
And he just has this quick look on his face, and then he kind of shrugs and just takes another drink.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, it's done.
Yeah.
It's like he knows, and it's done.
Yeah. You know?
And there's no point in fighting the inevitable. And it's like, okay, it's been done. And I just love that meticulous, once again, using that word, that meticulous nature to him, where he's just like, okay, well, he got me. You know?
But he never takes another sip. He only takes the one, and then you never see him do it again. So the question was...
I thought he did. I thought he took a second sip on that.
Yeah, because the whole thing is he puts it to his mouth, but he never opens the lips. So my understanding of the end of the film is that he's aware, and he's like, I've only got a little bit in my mouth, and then it's kind of like he doesn't end up dying. That was what I got from
it. No, he did die, though. Oh, no, he died. And that was the other thing I loved about the original film, was the fact that he did die at the end. And that was such a 70s thing to do, which is he does get done. He is dead. That is a heart attack.
Yeah.
He dies. He falls down.
Yeah.
But he still takes out. Mm. He still takes out the kid. Yeah. You know. And that's what I love about that ending, is the fact that this inevitable conclusion of these two hitmen wiping each other out.
Yeah.
You know, at the end. And that's actually one of the things I hated about the remake.
Yeah.
Was the fact that it was going along the same idea. It was going along, and what I actually, two things I hated about it. First of all, and once again, spoilers for this film, I'm sorry for the ending, but the comparisons are going to be inevitable. Ben Foster makes a rash choice to kill him. Yeah. There's no planning to that. He just goes, fuck it, and does it, right? Puts the petrol in the, breaks the petrol pump, walks away, shoots it, the thing blows up, then goes back to the house, and you see the car, and you go, okay, we're going to go with that original ending. Gets in the car, starts driving, car goes boom, right? Yeah. And that should have been the end of the film.
Yeah.
But instead, because we're in PC world that we're in now, we have to cut to that shot of saying, see, he actually rolled out of the car and he got away and he drives away all by himself. It's like you go, that kind of deflates what the original film had going for it. You know, the original film had going for it was this inevitable smashing of two assassins, killer of killers. You know, this idea of these two assassins who are going to inevitably kill each other. You know, over what they believe in.
Yeah, exactly. No, and that's the difference for me. It's like the original film.
Because what it feels like is this one is like Jason Statham lives. Let's make a sequel. You know,
exactly. And we'll have the mechanic too, in which Ben Foster's character comes back somehow with a burnt face, and they will have a massive punch up on a roof, and there will be 10 more jobs,
or
equally as badly planned,
or it'll be the mechanic, the next generation. He'll take on another apprentice.
Oh, dude. And it can be a chick.
It can be a chick.
Oh, man.
It can be the prostitute. There you go. Dude, no. So, as you can see here, we're not big fans of the remake. And, there's something to be said about star power as well. Statham, I love. Don't get me wrong. I love Statham. I think Statham is perfectly suited to the kinds of films that he makes. Mm. This wasn't his film.
No.
You know, because this film required a less physical actor. This film required somebody who was going to use their head, their brawn, you know?
Exactly.
And what we got was, as I say, we got Transporter 4. And that does, you know, there's some great moments in this. And if you roll those into a Transporter, that in the trailer, you see that shot of the car going through the bus and stuff like that. I mean, great stuff, you know? And you know, Simon West does that sort of stuff really well. We saw that in Con Air, you know? Mm. And that's great. This is not his film. This is not Statham's film. It is not his film, you know, and they need to move away. And this is going to bring us to inevitable conversation about remakes. And I am officially over remakes. I'm done. And what I mean by that is not necessarily, it's hard to say, it's hard to qualify, because there have been remakes I've liked. Mm. Okay. And there have been remakes that are better than the original. There's no doubt about it. But on the most part, the remakes that work are the remakes that actually pay homage to the original film that they're based on.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing when we got into the whole Walking Dead issue, and I was having problems with that as well. And I think the reason I was having problems with that was the same reason I had a problem with a lot of remakes, which is, if you're going to remake something, then remake it.
Yeah.
Don't go, we're going to make a remake of it, but we're going to change everything you loved about the original film, because obviously we know how to do it better. If that's the situation, make an original film, don't remake that film. Because what's the point in calling it The Mechanic, as an example, and not making The Mechanic?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's the same thing that you could argue with, what else have we had recently? Oh, the one we were talking about before was Clash of the Titans. Clash of the Titans is a great example. Because you sit there and go, okay, the argument is you're selling Clash of the Titans on the fan base of the original Clash of the Titans. That philosophy in itself is fundamentally flawed, because there aren't a huge number of Clash of Titans fans. Because Clash of Titans, let's face it, is not a particularly great film, the 1980s version. It's a silly camp film. And there's a hardcore base to that who will say it's a great film. When they go see the remake and they don't get the original film, they don't get any of the features of the original film, they go, well, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Whereas the people who don't know the original film, who that film is obviously marketed at, are going to look at it and go, well, you know, this isn't a film anyway. I wanted to see.
I think that it feels a lot like, especially with things like Clash of the Titans, it's like it's source material that they can pull on, right?
Yeah.
That people aren't really going to care if they fuck around with it. You know what I mean? The only people that will are the diehard film fans.
Yeah.
And we're the only ones that get hurt.
Yeah, because we look at it and go, but movies, that's not Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, but the rest of the world goes to see it and thinks it's great, and it pulls in, you know, a bazillion dollars.
Here's a concept for you. Make a film based in Greek mythology.
Wouldn't sell.
And don't call it Clash of the Titans.
It'll be interesting. Let's see if we can find a film. Next time we see a film coming out that is an original IP, it's original new product, right? And then
Avatar.
No. Way too much there. But what I'm saying is, with a lot of similarities to an old film, and we'll see if it sells.
Avatar.
It doesn't count. It's got James Cameron on the thing, and it had a fucking, like, 6-year-long advertising.
Yeah, but it's basically Dances with Wolves and Pocahontas rolled into a science fiction environment. So it's based on other films, but it's an original IP made $2 billion at the box office, you know?
The point is that it's not going to change, because the reality is that the average...
Jason Milburn says, ha ha ha, original idea, Josh, no such thing.
When I say an original idea, I just mean a film that isn't based off something else.
Yeah. Not a remake. Perfect example. Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 was another great example. The 70s Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 was a sensational film.
Yeah.
They took the concept and they said, let's remake that film, call it Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, and then not do anything that was in the original film.
Yeah.
So you go, why did you bother remaking it? Why didn't you just make a new film about a hostage situation on a train?
Yeah.
You didn't have to even say you were based on Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 because there was nothing in it that even resembled the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. You just had to change the name of the train. And then you would have had an original concept. And that's the problem, is you sit there and Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 is a really good example. Same as The Mechanic, where you go, we didn't need to remake. I don't think the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 sold that film. There aren't enough people today who have seen the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 for that to be a huge marketing draw, you know? Yet, and Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the remake, didn't do very well at the box office, you know? So I'm just a little over this whole concept of remakes at this point. I'm wary of remakes at this point, let me just say, you know? I'm not getting as excited where they say, oh, we're remaking something. I mean, God, the other one that just stands out as a glaring example is The Day the Earth Stood Still. That remake, as we said in our 45-minute long discussion with Katrina way back in the early days, bared no resemblance to the original film. It bared no resemblance to the original film except for the fact that an alien landed.
Yeah.
You know? And you go, why did they bother remaking what is considered to be one of the greatest science fiction films of all time?
It's on the top of a lot of lists.
And not do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? It's one of those situations. And yes, there's also the argument against the entire concept of remaking foreign films. That's a whole different bag of wax, you know, it's a whole different ball of wax, because these are films that we're not even remaking because they were classics. We're remaking them because there's this belief that people won't read subtitles. And I think if a film is good enough, people will read the subtitles. Problem is that no studio wants to put marketing dollars behind subtitles.
Yeah.
And it's scary. I just wish they would stop that. Nicole Kidman's Body Snatchers. That was terrible as well. Yes, James, I agree with you. And it's very interesting, actually, because that's a very good example of a remake that did work. Because the 1950s version of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a great film and a classic, and is really a statement about McCarthyism of its era. In the 70s, they remade Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which we both had on our list last week, and it's a great science fiction film. And all they did was took away the political aspect of it, and they still kept the core story, though, and that worked very well for that film. And that's okay. You can change things because it is a different time. You have to switch things up a little bit.
I think it really comes down to whether or not the people behind the film really understand the material.
Or liked it.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it really, I'm going to stay the same way I've always been, which is that I go into every single remake wary, but at the same time, I try and be excited about things. And look, every now and then it'll work, and sometimes it won't. But I mean, like, if I expand that out to films in general, that usually happens with everything I watch. I mean, look, the reality is remakes, you either get them or you don't, but I could go see a different movie at the cinema, like, no strings attached, and I've probably got a 50-50 chance of liking that one, too. It's like, films are always going to be like this, and I'm not going to go stop seeing them.
James from Melbourne says, people have a chip on their shoulder about remaking foreigns, though, because sometimes America does it better, a la The Ring.
Goddamn right.
I was thinking about that, actually. Here's a thought for you, and I'm not sure, I haven't gone into depth on this, but this is just a thought that just occurred to me. Is it also a cultural thing, though? Because the original Ring, the Japanese version, made a bucket of money in Japan and Europe and across Asia, right? It was huge. I don't think it made as much money in America because it was only released in art houses and stuff like that. The American version is Americanized for an American audience, so it's much more in tune with what they would actually watch.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if, like, I actually agree. I think the Ring remake, the American version, is a better film. But I think that's probably because I have a Western audience approach to it.
No, to me, there's a lot of things that the Western version did better. Like, I think just making it a bit more terrifying, making it a bit darker, working a lot on your source material. It's also the fact that I think, who did we decide the director was on that one?
On the remake?
Yeah.
Gore Verbinski.
Gore Verbinski. Didn't I say that and you said I was wrong?
No. I think we agreed on
that.
Oh,
no. I think I said Del Toro by accident.
Oh, you said Del Toro. That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, the thing that I thought really worked is he sat down and went, what is it that makes this film creepy?
Hmm.
And he pulled that concept out and it's now been redistributed to horror everywhere.
Yeah, like
it's
become
a concept. It's that creepiness that goes past sort of home invasion or sort of, you know, personal space or being watched or whatever. It's taking that core element of the supernatural and really kind of exacerbating it in the remake. So that's an option where somebody's got the source material right because they've taken what needed to be taken out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to just recreating the story and going, who's popular at the moment? Who will work in our main role? You know, we need a chihuahua in this film so that'll get the dog audience.
The demographic, the chihuahua India. Demographic,
and
yeah.
And it's like you can feel when something's overproduced and it's like these sort of films either
I'm going to blame senility on the mechanic because the producers of the remake are the same producers as the original. They got to be 150 years old by now, you know? So I think they went, yeah, let's make this film called The Mechanic. We've never done that before.
I actually disagree with that, James, because as much as I see what you're trying to say about the fact that I'm Western, I think if you showed someone of Asian descent The American Ring, it's still just as terrifying because it's that core creepiness taken to an excess. It's like when you watch the original Ring, the kills aren't creepy. And if you are a horror fan, no matter where you are, the idea of someone sitting there, literally no makeup, no extra work, just sitting there going like this with their mouth open, isn't terrifying if you're looking at that person because it pulled me immediately out of the moment. What should have been the most sparked horror point of the film with these horribly gaunt people wasn't gaunt. They're just standing there with their face and their eyes roll back. Their jaws aren't stretched. There's no physical effect. They're just in a position which is supposed to be terrifying.
Yeah,
they weren't even doing it well. And it's like, that's a flaw not of my my background. It's a flaw of filmmaking. In the fact that they haven't made it terrifying enough.
Yeah. Now, it's a very hard call, this whole... the foreign remake to Western remake is a very hard call. But let's also remember, it sometimes goes the other way.
Yeah.
I'm actually just about to sit and watch tonight A Woman, a Gun, and a Noodle Shop, which is
the remake
of Blood Simple.
Yeah.
And I'm intrigued. I am intrigued to watch this, you know, so we'll see what happens. It's supposed to actually be quite good, so we'll have a look at it. All right, so I think the long and the short of this is skip the remake of The Mechanic. It really isn't worth
going
to. And go buy The Mechanic 1972.
Go buy the original one. You can buy it for $7 at a DVD store.
Yeah, it's not particularly good quality, and it would be nice if they would release a good remastered version of it. It'd be nice to see it on Blu-ray or something like that, because it probably looks great. But it's the best we can do for the moment, and it is worth having a look at. So if you haven't watched the 1972 version of The Mechanic, go watch that instead.
Yeah,
because it is actually a better film.
All right, should we do a list of five?
Yeah, let's do a list of five real quick because we are running way over time, but that's okay. What the hell? All right, that's not my list of five.
I'm very keen to find out what you've got.
All right, so what have we got in our list of five? Our list of five this week is five movie assassins in honor of these The Mechanic. And I'll start off with basically saying my number five is Charlie Baltimore. Gina Davis's character from The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yeah.
Chefs do that. Yes. So I liked that film. It's actually, I think, quite possibly the only, possibly to use this phrase, truly good Rennie Harlan film. Mm. There are other Rennie Harlan films that are watchable, but I think it's certainly the first and only truly good Rennie Harlan film. Mm. So your number five.
My number five is Miguel Bane, who was the Antonio Banderas' character in Assassins.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I don't like Stallone as much. I mean, Stallone
but
playing
But I quite enjoyed
silent.
The film, though.
Yeah, but Stallone playing silent works, because if he doesn't speak, it's a better film.
True.
But Miguel Bane, his character, he is insane. And I love that. It's like, this guy is the opposite end of Assassins to what Stallone as. Stallone is the cold, calculating Charles
in
Bronson.
In fact, you
type.
Know what? There is more similarity between the film Assassins and The Mechanic than there is with the remake
Absolutely.
Of The Mechanic.
But it was just the fact that this guy was willing to do anything to get the job done. Yeah. Like, this guy was the wet work guy you throw in if you want to make a mess, if you want to make a statement. And that was why I loved him as a character. This guy will drive cars into you. He will try and kill you at a freaking... Like,
I haven't watched that in ages. I've got to watch that again.
No. He was just a really cool character.
He was. No, I agree. I actually didn't put Assassins on my list at all. Martin Q. Blank.
Ah, I knew you were going to have that. That's why I left it off. Absolutely.
From the film Gross Point Blank. John Cusack as the reluctant hitman trying to figure out his life and going to his high school reunion. That film is made by the end shootout where he's trying to have a relationship discussion with Minnie Driver while in the middle of a gunfight. Yep.
That and the explosion of the convenience store is another one I always love.
Also, there's so many good moments. Also, the conversation in the coffee shop between Dan Aykroyd and him as well about the business and so forth. Great stuff. It's a great film. Well worth having a look at if you haven't seen Gross Point Blank.
Yeah.
Your number four?
Slevin. The Wrong Man or Lucky Number Slevin. Look, he is a really cool character, and his switch when you finally realize that he is actually a cold-blooded murderer is fucking brilliant.
Yes.
That moment where the whole film just changes on you.
And now I gotta say, if you haven't seen The Wrong Man for Australia, or if you're in America, the Lucky Number 7, if you have not seen this film, go get it.
It's fucking great.
It is a great film, and it is so offbeat and so out of its mind that you just sit there. We watched it together, my wife and I, and we just sat there going, this is brilliant. So clever. My number three is actually The Jackal, but not Bruce Willis. My number three is the Edward Fox Jackal from Day of the Jackal. He, once again, just symbolizes that whole concept of the cold, methodical, planned assassination of President de Gaulle. And it's a much better film than the Bruce Willis version. Now, Bruce Willis version is fun, but like the new version of The Mechanic, it's more of a kind of out there ballsy film, whereas the original Jackal is a very methodical thriller about a presidential assassination and a great film to boot. And Fox is fantastic. Your number three.
My number three is Vincent, who was Tom Cruise's character in Collateral.
I almost put that down.
No, he is... It's the gray hair, which just made him such a bizarre-looking person. And also just his calculating coldness is really different. It's like the man is very adaptive, but he's a fantastic killer. That scene where he gets his wallet stolen and he just murders that dude while looking directly at... Jamie Foxx is just...
It's a chilling performance. And every now and again, when people sit there and really rag out Tom Cruise, personally, in a personal life, Tom Cruise is a whack job. But there are times when you sit there and go, I can actually point you to two or three films where you go, this guy really can act. Collateral is one. Born on the 4th of July is another, you know? And you sit there and go, he can... Magnolia is another. You know, he can act.
Yeah.
And Collateral is a fantastic film. I almost had it on my list. Almost there. Yeah. My number two is Leon from The Professional. Now, I am sure he's somewhere on your list as well, but... and we might save it. Shall I save it?
No.
All right. I'll go on and say that Jean Reno's portrayal of Leon is... a beautiful portrayal of a person who basically is lonely, but has a job to do. It is an extension of the same character that he kind of played in Nikita as the cleaner. I think his name was...
A little bit more controlled.
A little bit more controlled, and he was more calculated. I think his name was Vincent as well in Nikita. And his relationship with Natalie Portman's young girl... verges on almost disturbing. It's fatherly at one point and love at another point, and it's a very interesting
to me. It never crosses the line to disturbing. It's just a love for her as a person, and that's the way I've always taken it. It's like, people can argue, yes, there is a bit of sexual tension, but you've got to look at the man himself.
Yeah,
and
is a disturbed person.
Well, it's more than he's a disturbed person. He has to be reserved. There is no other option for him. His life depends on him being reserved. And it's like, just the concept of being close to someone is what he gets.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's confused in the same way she is. They're both children in a way.
Yeah.
And it's like,
He is. He's like a man-child.
Yeah.
And once again, I like to say that it actually has more resemblance to the original Mechanic than the remake of The Mechanic does, once again. But The Professional or Leon The Professional or Leon, depending on what version you get, is...
Well, I'll change this order around because either of these two are literally one and two...
okay, not a problem.
So look, I will say that, yeah, we'll call out my number two as well, because I have to say, he is just an incredible character, and also...
And Jean Reno is such a good actor. I mean, he is such a good actor. He just pulls that off.
Absolutely. I have never seen a film with him in it that I haven't enjoyed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Agreed. And also, I think it is quite arguably one of Luc Besson's best films.
Yep.
It's just an amazing film all around. And it's recently come out on Blu-ray. So if you can get yourself a copy of it on Blu-ray, well worth having a look at. Okay, well, in that case, I'll slip onto my number one then. And my number one is Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men.
Just the creepiest character we have seen on screen for years.
Absolutely. And there are a couple of scenes in particular. I mean, the first, I think it's one of the first times you see him in the film where he walks up and just takes that guy out with that cattle gun, which is just so cold and calculated. But the scene that really, where you sit there and go, this guy is just creepy, is the flipping of the coin scene in the petrol station, which is just awesome.
Amazing.
It's an amazing sequence.
Yeah.
He is like a human Terminator. He just keeps going.
Yep.
You know?
He just gets up and keeps moving.
Yeah, an amazing performance from Javier Bardem as well, and well deserving of his Oscar. It's a terrific film and terrific character.
Yeah.
Your number one.
My number one is Ghost Dog from the film Ghost Dog.
I almost put that on my list as well.
Look, Forest Whitaker really, he stands out in the film, and he got his career based on this film, in my opinion, which is just, he is a samurai in an environment which isn't like that. And it's just, it's that beautiful kind of sense of kind of the perfect assassin, but also loyalty like nothing else. Like, his loyalty to his master is ridiculous, to the point where I actually sit there at times and you just, by the end of the film, you're like, don't do it. Just please don't do it. But he follows through with everything that he does because it's how he's taught himself to react and how he has become what he has become. And it's, his character is really well acted, but also just a really well thought out character. Like, just to take everything that was that concept and move it into kind of a hip-hop kind of a culture is just a really smart thing, and also a great film.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A couple of people that I didn't put on this list, the people who missed out on this list, just in case, and you've probably got a couple as well, I'm sure, but Jules and Vincent from Pulp Fiction almost made the list as well, because they're just fantastic characters. And I want to know... Charlize Theron, according to Callison, Charlize Theron plays two assassins, one in Terminator and one in Aeon Flux. I never saw Aeon Flux as an assassin.
No, I didn't really think
she did. She killed people, yes, but I never saw her as an assassin. That was her primary job. But I could be wrong. It's been a while since I've seen it. But she was not in a Terminator film.
I've blocked that movie out of my mind because it gave me brain aids watching it.
I think you're thinking of Locan. What's her name? Something Locan, the girl who played the female Terminator in Terminator 3. It's not Charlize Theron. What is her first name? Locan. She went on to play Blood Rain.
Christina Locan?
Yeah, Christina Locan. And there was another one which almost made my list, which of course is Nikita.
Yeah.
From Nikita. The reason why she came off the list, I would just say, is...
she doesn't want
to
be...
Because it occurred to me, she's a reluctant assassin. She's roped into it, and it's all about her trying to get out.
Yeah.
So she never actually made... But it's a great film. If you haven't seen... Once again, multiple titles, Nikita, or in Australia, it was released as La Femme Nikita. Well worth seeing. Do not see the American remake.
Absolutely.
Do not see the American remake. Point of no return. It's a terrible film. And Bridget Fonda has no weight behind her as the Nikita character.
Yuck.
All right, we're going to get out of here because it's been a very long show.
Yes.
And we are done. If you agree or disagree with anything that we had to say here, we'd love to hear what you had to think about the mechanic, by the way. This is something that, or remakes in general, in fact. I'd love some of our feedback to be about remakes because you've heard our opinions. I'd love to hear what you guys have got to say about it. Feedback at geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167. Or if you're cheap, our Skype ID is Geek Actually, all one word. You can get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, do all those things that you want to do. Just go to our website, geekactually.com. On the sidebar, right hanging on the sidebar, you'll see a little tab that just says follow us. If you click on that, a box will open. It has all our links on it, all right? Mm. And you can find anything you want to find to do that. Mm. We want to remind you that this is only one of two shows that we put out. The other show we put out is Geek Actually, which is our tech and general geek culture show. Mm-hmm. We record these both live on a Saturday. We start around the 12 p.m. mark-ish. Mm-hmm. We record Geek Actually, take a short break, and then roll into Film Actually. And so do check those out. They're both available on iTunes, this show and the other one. And just a quick plea, we said this on Geek Actually as well, if you are an iTunes user for your podcast, if that is your podcast catcher, please take just a second out of your day and drop us a review or a rating. A rating will take you a second. You just click on something. Or if you want to give us a review, take us a couple seconds. We're in particular, we're pointing at you, North America. We would really like some reviews on the North American store. And we have a few friends that we like to promote. First of all, my son is in the chat room putting more exclamation points than I can count. So we will say you should go and have a look at his YouTube page. You can go to youtube.com/Nicky McVeigh and you can see all of his fine Lego animated films. We also have our friends, the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, Real Junkies. You can find them on iTunes or go to weekendronin.com, which is their homepage. They are a movie podcast like us, but they like to drink tequila, and we have differing opinions than them, and it's always interesting to hear their take on stuff. So because they are much more into the action films and stuff than, say, I would hazard a guess here that I don't think you would ever get Greg into See No Strings Attached, right? So, yeah. So yes, they do have a difference in taste and opinions, and that's wonderful. It makes the world go round to have different opinions.
I'm damn right.
And we also want to throw out a quick mention to our friend Rachel over at the Funky Film Show. Actually, I should say Rachel and Lewis. Both of you guys. All right. Rachel, just because she's the one that made contact with us, but Rachel and Lewis, you both do the show. Rachel and Lewis over at the Funky Film Show. You can find out on Radio for your... Lost my ability to talk.
And take two.
Take two. Thursdays on Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM. Hey, how's that? Or you can catch up with it, of course, on RadioFremantle.com. Mm. And Josh, I believe you have another show.
RawDLC.com is the website to go through. We have a whole lot of new news, new things, and we also have a live show Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, and we're done.
Okay.
And to answer James... from Melbourne's question, it will be a couple of weeks on Arbiter. We've just had a few things fall through, which we have to follow up with new articles and stuff.
That's cool. What do you want for nothing?
Goddamn.
All right, and this week, for our audio listeners, we are going to be finishing the show today because we don't have the score to The Mechanic, unfortunately.
Oh, and Josh at...
Josh, I forgot about Josh. Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. He did our cartoon artwork for our cover arts, and he's fantastic. Go see his other artwork over there. Now, we'll be finishing the show because we didn't get the soundtrack to The Mechanic, unfortunately. But in watching the Pirates of the Caribbean trailer again, really made me love that music. So we'll be going out with a track called He's a Pirate from the original Claus Bedelt sound, Bedelt score from Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, which is one of my favorites. So that will be the music that you hear leading us out of this show. And if there's nothing else to add... Nothing at all. We're going to say goodbye. We're going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all again next week. Bye now.